Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to The Continued Silence with me, Emma-Jane Taylor, on UK Health Radio. The Continued Silence is focused on the very uncomfortable conversation of child sex abuse and the importance of talking openly about this subject to try and normalise the conversation. Child sexual abuse is real. It affects millions of people around the world, young and old. The work we do is very much engaging more lateral thought processes on this terrible crime, supporting survivors, protecting children, and of course, helping those not wanting to listen, to listen. Joining me each show is my resident panel, therapist Denise Corby, activist Chris Tuck, usually Mike Borton, my resident poet, but he is not with us again this time, but he will be back. Each week, we are joined by guests from around the world to share more insights on this crippling conversation and to help us share more important messages. This month, we are joined by our guest, Gloria Masters, and our theme is child sexual abuse materials, including imagery. Please stay with us for the next hour, and of course, do not go anywhere. We would like you to be involved in this conversation here on UK Health Radio. Okay, so welcome to the show, to my panel, Denise, Chris, and to Gloria. First of all, I'm going to come to Denise. Denny, we are talking about a very deep, complex conversation, child sexual abuse materials, including imagery. You know, this is a huge conversation. There's been a lot of conversation about it over the last few months. And of course, it has caused lots of conversation on social media. What's your take on all of this, Denny?
Yeah, it has, hasn't it? I think my first take and the first point I think we'd all like to get out there is that language matters. It really does matter. It has a huge impact on how it's seen and how it's dealt with, how it's reported, and how the justice system deal with it. So as a result of the NSPCC report, they very overtly published that unclear language leads to not only confusion, but can perpetuate the harm being caused within child sexual abuse. Very, very clear, there is no such thing as child pornography. Child sexual abuse materials, including imagery, is actually children being groomed, coerced, and exploited by their abusers. I think if we've used child pornography before, it implies there's a subcategory of legally acceptable pornography rather than a form of child abuse and crime. So I think that's a really important opener to the show. So for me, it's about looking at the child abuse and exploitation and crime, but also around the legal pornography and the accessibility and impact upon young people on their developmental and sexual practice and beliefs.
Thank you, Denise. It's again a really important conversation. You know, we hear child pornography used so often across social media, in the media. And it's like you say, it's about language change and educating people on that language change. You know, I don't know about you, child pornography I find so offensive as a survivor and as, you know, who has experiences of this conversation. So, you know, it is, as you say, you know, it's groomers coercing, abusing, and sexually towards children. It is not child pornography. And Denise is really right. It is about language and education. Thank you, Denny. I keep calling you Denny. I'm going from Denny to Denise today.
It's very yes,
I know, you. I know. But anyway, I'm going to call you Denny because that's what I'm used to seeing. It's just like you throw me Denny when I see Denise on your screen. But anyway, I know her as DC, but we'll call her Denny today. Thank you, Denny. Great opener. Okay, so Chris, welcome to today's show. I know this conversation is very important to you as well, and language is super important to you. So, you know, materials, including imagery. When did we need to start changing it, and why has it taken so long to change this language?
I think we've now come to a place where we're all talking about the prevalence of child sexual abuse and child sexual exploitation, including what the media term child porn. And it triggers many of us that have succumbed, unfortunately, to child sexual abuse and exploitation. And we are just not putting up with that language anymore because of what it actually means. Each image of child sexual abuse is a child being raped, a child being sexually assaulted, a child being tortured. And I could use more descriptive language, but I'm going to not do that. So each image is a crime scene. And even if that child is rescued, that image could last out in the ether for the lifetime of that child into their adulthood. And just, I've heard from victim and survivors that have had child abuse images out there in the ether, and the knowledge that it's out there about them is re-traumatizing and re-triggering for them. And it's just not right. We have to deal with this situation, and it starts with making sure we use the right language for the right reason. It's not child porn. There's nothing legal about it whatsoever.
What you just said there, Chris, two words really resonated with me. It's a crime scene. It is a crime
100%.
scene. And I've never heard anyone say that before. And I think that's a really a powerful statement there. What you say, and the imageries are out there, and it will affect that young person who's now an adult for the rest of their life, because they don't know when they might see them again. They might show up when you're least expecting, potentially showing up past your death into, your family, and how debilitating that will be for the next generation, and this conversation. So yeah, really powerful there, Chris. Crime scene, Denny's crime scene. Two very strong words there that Chris used, which I've never heard used for this conversation, but I found that really powerful.
Yeah, had a huge impact, didn't it? I felt myself kind of almost sit back. And it's absolutely right. The use of child sexual abuse, including images, enables immediate recognition that it's abuse immediately. It's interesting when I was reading all around this, what I homed in on, and Chris, I don't know whether you've got anything to say on this, was that by changing the language, it was clear that the police were beginning to see it as something different, which I have to say, I found quite shocking that just the change of a language, you would expect, wouldn't you, a police force to absolutely see child images as child images. But it was saying that as the language has changed, police are far more likely to consider what's lying behind the actual child abuse of the images and the material, whereas they hadn't considered that there was maybe something lying behind that as well. So I found that quite astonishing. And so, yeah, absolutely, Chris, to use the word crime scene is absolutely spot on and incredibly impactful.
So impactful, so powerful. Thanks, Denny. So today's guest is Gloria. Gloria, it's great to have you with us on today's show. Obviously, you've just listened to the introduction with Denny and Chris there. And obviously, you've got your own story. But before we get into sort of a deeper conversation, let's just, if you can just introduce yourself to our listeners here on UK Health Radio. Thank you.
Sure. So my name's Gloria Masters. I'm a survivor of 16 years of child sexual abuse, including exploitation material in the form of images and videos. So I'm also an author of two books. One is my memoir, and the second is a guide for adult survivors of child sexual abuse.
Thanks, Gloria. And just tell our listeners where you are at the moment. Maybe.
So based in Auckland, New Zealand. So we're 5:30 in the morning here. And would you like me to tell you what's going to happen on your Wednesday?
Yes. So obviously these shows go out throughout the month, but Gloria is in New Zealand. And, you know, isn't it great that we are reaching such, far away places with the work that we're doing and connecting, and it becomes a bit of a, you know, a puzzle, or, you know, we're all connecting together and becoming one voice, which I think is a really important part of certainly the work that we do here on UK Health Radio. So Gloria, thank you for joining us. So given what you've just heard from Denny and Chris there, what kind of thoughts or feedback or anything to add really to what they were saying about this conversation of child sexual abuse materials, including imagery? Against the conversations that we hear about it being child sexual abuse porn.
Yes, and I love that Chris mentioned this, and I 100% agree with Denise. Look, it does, you do take a step back. Each of those incidents are a crime scene, and wow, the power of that. But equally, I want to come back to something Denise said, because I believe it's so powerful. The grooming, when you consider this, in my opinion, it's actually, you know, your comment was, it's interesting that the police are now seeing it the way they are, which is taking it much more seriously. And I would just like to offer this as a theory. It's never just the children that are groomed. And I believe all of society, including police, are groomed as well, including languaging. So when you consider that child porn, as you just said, EJ, compared to what it actually is, which is child exploitation material, including imagery, there we have it. It's not palatable anymore. So I just want to say, I think grooming happens with everybody.
Yes, and really important part of this conversation. Now, Gloria, just sort of talking about this again, sort of the pornography side, and I think just to sort of reiterate the importance of changing this language, here in the UK, we still hear often the media, the social media, people out there talking about pornography, children pornography. Is in New Zealand, do you think that the same conversations are happening there, or do you think there's been a change and a shift in this conversation back, to materials, including imagery?
Yes, look, it's interesting. So first up, New Zealand lead the world in child sexual abuse statistics. We know that by the time a girl is 16, she will have been, not might be or could be, but will have been sexually abused. So that's nothing to be proud of in our country. We equally have it for boys, but the numbers tend to change to up to 1 in 4 to 6 boys will be abused by the time they're 16. So that leads me to answering your question, which is, I don't believe we are as far ahead as you guys in the UK on this. I believe the languaging is still child porn, which makes me feel physically sick as I say that term. And therefore, it's palatable, team, and it's seen as it's not taken as seriously. No one's taking a step back with it. Every day on our news and in our media, there is more coming about child sexual abuse. However, it's crickets. The power of silence threatens to overwhelm us around
action. Gloria, can I just double check with you about your stats? Did you mean every girl will be abused, or is it 1 in 4?
I beg your pardon, 1 in 3.
1 in 3 girls and 1 in 6 boys, did you say, is your stats in New Zealand?
Yes. Yeah.
It is similar over here, to be fair. No one knows the true prevalence. Everyone's tried to have a stab at the number, but we all come to the conclusion that it's far higher than what we know it to be reported as, because we know it's underreported.
100% agree, which is quite frightening, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it's very frightening. Yeah.
Yeah,
so
and
that's
I think,
why these
conversations
are powerful, so powerful and needed.
Thanks for clarifying that with Chris. And I think, you know, 1 in 3, 1 in 4, 1 in 5, 1 in 6, 1 in 10, 1 in 20, whatever it is 1 in something, is 1 too many. And, you know, I see stats thrown around left, right, and center about it being 1 in 3, 1 in 4, 1 in 6. And every time I look at it, I just think, you know, it should be none. I mean, you know, that's what we're working towards. That's what we'd like to see. Will it ever happen in our lifetime? Will it ever happen in the world? We'd like to think so, right? But I guess the reality, Denny, is that, you know, these conversations potentially reduce the risks because it's awareness, it's knowledge, it's education. And it potentially will be saving one child or educating an adult to help with monitor a child's behavior to help them not go into those dangerous situations of being groomed.
Yeah, of course. And we know, don't we, that silence is deafening around this topic in every area of society. And so the more we hear about it, the more we really look at language, the more people feel they can come forward. And, you know, it's not for everyone to disclose. There has to be recognition of safety within that. But disclosure doesn't always mean that the message is getting out there. Shows like this, the work that Chris does, Gloria, the work that you do. I feel myself that over the last 18 months in particular, the silence is beginning to shift somewhat. We are beginning to have conversations in my friendship groups, in kind of sports clubs. The conversation is beginning to happen. But I think I want to just go back to what Gloria said. And again, that really impacted upon me. You're absolutely right. Grooming happens to everybody when child sexual abuse is at play. And I think that was really, you know, we've got the crime scene and the grooming of everybody. They're two really powerful statements. When people say, how come it's still going on, how come we're beginning to you know, have the realization of how widespread it is, it's for those two reasons, isn't it, that we've covered up the crime scenes and there's grooming of everybody.
Absolutely. Look, we're going to take a short break now, so please don't go anywhere. We will be back after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back to today's show, where we are talking about child sexual abuse materials, not imagery, with me, Emma Jane Taylor, and my resident panel, Denny Corby, Chris Tuck, and of course, our guest today, all the way over in New Zealand, is Gloria Masters. The conversation is a difficult conversation. If you've just tuned in, we are talking about child sexual abuse materials, including imagery. We are looking at education. We are looking at changing language. We are looking at taking a shift away from that horrible, horrible conversation of child pornography, because it absolutely isn't. As Chris said in the first part of this show, these imageries are crime scenes. I mean, I found that quite overwhelming just to hear that. And I think that will sort of stay with me forever now, Chris. So thank you for that. Because we always live and learn, don't we? We're always growing. We're always finding new ways. And, you know, Gloria said, you know, anyone who's been sexually abused will have been groomed as well. You know, that again, like Denny say, was two very powerful things already from today's show. So Thank you, ladies. It's been a great sort of start to today. But Gloria, just before we sort of carry on with this conversation, you work at Handing the Shame Back, which is the work that you're doing over in New Zealand. So do you want to just share a little bit about that with us, with our listeners here?
Great, yes. So I am the founder and CEO of this charity and established this last year because I became aware through interviewing survivors on my YouTube channel of the same name that there was not a place for people to safely share. And don't get me wrong, we don't need every survivor out there to come out and be on a public platform. There are 150 different ways to share. It's simply for those that felt they would feel really empowered and emboldened to be interviewed about their story, which, as we know, if we hear a story, it gives us permission then to share ours or feel affinity and equally less alone. So my charity is established to provide support and resource for the up to 1 in 3 adults wandering around the planet who have experienced this. And although child sexual abuse is unacceptable, I want to put something out there, team, which is there seems to be a tacit permission, just breathe through this, because there's not a huge reaction. Every day in our country, we have story after story after story around a child, a girl, a boy being abused, or a court system addressing that. But where's the outcry? And that's why I call this a silent endemic, because this is an endemic. Where is the nationwide movement? Where's the global movement on this? And that's what really concerns me. It's almost now, in my opinion, people have become really desensitized to this. It's, oh, did you see that story about Dilworth School?
Yeah.
Next. That's-
Yeah, Gloria, that's really interesting, because I had just written down as we were going along the word normalizing. And here we are, you know, quite rightly wanting silence to be lifted and for the conversation to open up. And yet you've just described, which did take our breath away a little bit. You know, I was holding my breath when you were saying it's not really having the impact. It's become part of the daily news. And I wonder whether that's because there's still a turning of the blind eye of the real impact on the victim. And then it's a news story. And I know Emma Jane is all over social media with this. We see the perpetrator, we see the story, we don't get to see the impact on the victim. And I'm wondering whether that's got something to do with that there's not this outcry, the victim's kind of forgotten, pushed aside.
And you know, just jumping in there on that conversation, there's been a story here in the UK running where a rapist has been given punishment of odd jobs here in the UK for raping a girl, and he's appealing that. But the fact that he's allowed to appeal that odd job punishment is shocking, and it just riles me. It gets me so angry, because as we all know, behind this story is a victim, and the impact on the victim is exactly what Denny was just saying, and that's what we need to do about changing the conversation. So yes, lifting the lid on the silence, or like you say, Gloria, on the 1 in 3 bobbling around the world in silence, suffering. Yes, lift the lid on that, but the impact of that and the reality of that needs to be continually shared. And I think just by hearing Chris say it's a crime scene, I would say I feel that that's really impactful, but maybe that's just me. But maybe that's work that Chris can do in her role as an activist on those two words, to so people can recognize the impact on the victim and what they will have gone through in life. And I think that's exactly, Denny, where the conversation needs to change. Is it's you know, I, like you say, I do a lot about this conversation, but I get totally hacked off with the fact that governments across the country have processes, there's laws in place for a rapist, a rapist who's been charged to now appeal the fact that he's been given odd jobs as a punishment. As far as I'm concerned, he should go to jail for life. But the fact that he's appealed it, and not just him, hundreds of people like him have been allowed to appeal a sentence. And that's where there's got to be a big shift. And I suppose that's the next layer of these conversations and the change that needs to happen. I'm going to just calm down for a second because those conversations get me completely riled up. So look, Gloria, the work that you're doing, handing the shame back, is a really vital, vital project that the world needs to hear and understand more of. So you've got a YouTube channel, you are an author, you are a survivor. Your key messages are that you're not alone, that there is hope after child sexual abuse, and I believe you. And I think the I believe you three words are really, again, a powerful conversation, and I think a show on its own, because, you know, we all know how important it is to lean in and listen. In all the years I've been here, listening and supporting people behind the scenes and in public, you know, those are the three words that often get left off because people don't really believe that someone has been sexually abused by their partner, their friend, their son, you know, their aunt, their sister, whatever. People just don't believe it. But I can't imagine anyone who would make that stuff up, right? Who would then go on a journey to advocate or become an activist or, you know, do a lot of work in this field for the sake of it. So how do we turn that conversation around, Gloria? How do we help people who are on the outside just start listening in a little bit more to believe someone talking about this conversation?
Thanks for the question.
Well, I decided not to throw that at Denny. She looked like she was busy up there.
Well, look, how do we turn that around? I think what we have to do is realise that for most good people, it is so uncomfortable and so unpalatable that they struggle. And their biggest wish, apart from trying to support, is to actually have you shut up and go away with all good intent. And it ties in nicely with what Denny just said, because I just want to come back to that. I think it's crucial, Emma Jane, that when we look at why the impact is not necessarily seen out there, it's because of adult survivors like ourselves. People have a little narrative around it, which is, oh, have you been able to move on yet? Or, oh, do you still need to talk about this? Or, oh, but that was so long ago, wasn't it? Or, oh, I always thought he was a good guy. I liked him. And so you can see how for people, when we look at why child sexual abuse is not a big, oh, that's terrible, A, because there's so much of it coming through, but equally, Denny, I don't believe that people see the impact because, again, just breathe, people don't want to because they don't know what to do with it. And I think there's so many layers to this that the education, go, Chris.
I think it's also so prevalent that it's been normalised, especially if it's generational, it's gone down through families that, for example, my mum's dead now. She's no longer here. But part of the conversation I had with her before she died was about her protecting her children. And she said, well, it happened to me and no one was there for me. That speaks volumes to me when I unpicked it, because she was almost saying, well, it happened to me. I didn't, not that she didn't see anything wrong with it, but, you know, why are we kicking up such a fuss with her and holding her to account when it happened to her? it doesn't make it right the way that she responded, but I just think it's so endemic, so prevalent. I think there's just apathy towards it within society. And I'm like you, Gloria, I can't put my finger on why we ain't got this humongous, like volcanic eruption against it. And why isn't everyone up in arms, and why isn't everybody dealing with it? And I've tried to really reflect and understand the reasons why. And that's all I can come up with at the moment, is that there is apathy. And also people are like, well, what do we do with it? Now you've told us, what do we do with it? So there's, I think, a mixture of all of that going on.
So, you know, these conversations, obviously, we're here to talk about child sexual abuse material, including imagery, which shows that a child has been engaging or exploited with child sexual abuse. And of course, if we come back to that, and then this conversation that you know you were talking about here, about, you know, the lack of interest in these conversations, the lack of reality about the fact that those are crime scenes, the impact on the victim, and we sort of bring it back in and start looking at it. You know, how many people out there listening to the show might be thinking, actually, I've got some images out there or some video footage. I don't know where it is. I'm now too scared to speak up. I'm too worried about what might happen because I start saying that there's images, and they might start throwing back. You know, what do we do with that, Denny? You know, how do we sort of guide anybody who might be sort of feeling right now a little bit nervous about the fact that there is some materials out there on them? Obviously, it's not their, this isn't their fault. This isn't their shame. And it shouldn't be their silence. But of course, as we know, as we've already discussed in this show and all of the other shows that we have done, the silence is deafening because of this, and the shame and embarrassment people might be feeling because of, you know, now being adults, knowing that there's images out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the answer to that is, it will be no surprise to you that there is safe space. And I don't mean that everyone, exactly what Gloria has just said, you know, not everyone has to stand on a platform, not everyone has to have a public presence. But when we're talking about the impact, we know the impact on survivors of child sexual abuse. We know that it's addictions. We know that it's core beliefs around shame and blame. And so I would urge anybody, and I know we have a system in this country at the moment that's at breaking point, but there are safe spaces, there are many organizations, there are therapists, they can get in contact with you, Emma Jane. I would encourage a safe space, if they feel that they're safe enough to do that, to start having conversations.
Yeah, and you know, my door is always open, because I have signposting to pretty much everyone I know who can help you on from me, if I, you know, so I can guide you forward on these conversations. And it's remembering that these conversations on materials, child sexual abuse materials, including imagery, we know that they are out there. We know that they are causing concern. We know that they are destructive and damaging people, and leaving people living in fear. We also know that there is a lot of support for you, and we are here to sort of guide you and help you. If you are sat in that position now listening, thinking, yeah, that's me, that's me, that's me, and you feel confident to, please do get in touch.
Yeah, and Emma Jane, on that topic, we often look at kind of what we can do to help kind of protect, don't we? And I'm immediately thinking around, the pandemic has brought about a volume of high use of social media for all of our young people. The risk is so huge that they are going to now fall prey to the issue of child abuse material with imagery. The access perpetrators have to young people's bedrooms daily is a huge piece of work I do when I'm in schools, around speaking to parents who have this sense still of it happens to other people and it's still the white van. And when I sit with them, and you know I've said this, Emma Jane, on many a occasion, how many people would ring the doorbell and say, can I come upstairs and see your seven-year-old? Yes, of course you can. That is exactly what they're doing every single day when they aren't monitoring the social media. And I think for me, we are going to see an increase if we do not get a grip of young people's use of social media. Chris, your hand's up. I know you'll have something to say on that.
Going back to this culture of apathy and normalisation, the child sexual abuse imagery and materials has absolutely exploded because of what you just described, Denny. But it's all in the stats as well. So if you go to the Internet Watch Foundation's website, for example, who deal with trying to take down these kind of damaging materials, it shows you the explosion. It was like 700% increase within 1 year. Yeah. And unless we call it out, unless we demand that action is being taken and we call out, you know, the language use, child pornography, we're not accepting it because that's not what it means. Unless we explain and raise awareness of the impact, society is not going to get it. So we're going to have to keep banging the drum and keep banging on the door, literally, to make, to have a sea change in all of this.
I agree, Chris. And I had a really quite shocking case around a young person in a primary school who was playing gaming. I'm not going to name what channel. And through that game and speaking and chatting through a game of a well-known fairy tale world, the perpetrator managed to get the colour of the uniform, the school, this disclosure of a school trip. And very thankfully, the police managed to, on that day, the perpetrator was there waiting for the young person coming out of the school. But that was through a very seemingly innocent, under 7 years old game on the internet. This is how easy it is for perpetrators to access our young people.
And I just don't think parents get it, do they, EJ? They just don't get it. They don't understand how dangerous the internet is for their children.
No, they don't. And I think we'll take a short break and continue with that conversation, because that in itself is a really big and wild conversation to have. So look, don't go anywhere. We are going to be back after this short break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back to today's show with me, Emma Jane Taylor, here on UK Health Radio with my panel, Denny and Chris, and today joined by Gloria Masters. So, you know, before we took our break today, we started discussing parental responsibility on the conversation of child sexual abuse materials, including imagery. And Chris just brought it up there before we went to the break, how parents are potentially not seeing the greater picture of what is going on in the online world, social media, on this conversation. So Chris, I'm going to bring you back in there. You know, I have big issues with this. There have been some huge influencers, and I'm not even going to mention their names because I don't want to flag them up any more than they need to be, but they've been online. They have been, they've been sharing pornography on there. They've pinned it to their profiles. One of the guys involved has actually now gone to prison, which I have. I don't drink, so I cracked open a bottle of fizzy water that night, because. But this shouldn't be a difficult conversation to have. We shouldn't be allowing anyone to pin pornography onto their profile And then when you look at that person who is suddenly become an influencer, who is followed by millions of people, and you know, we've got the Andrew Tates of the world as well now, you know, how come that is allowed? How come people aren't closed down immediately? How come they're not cancelled? You know, people are getting cancelled for the most ridiculous of things on the internet. But and balance, nothing comes close to some of the stuff I see, and I just can't get my head around it. And sometimes I just think, have I lost the plot? I mean, am I literally going crazy here on this? Is it just me? I mean, I know it's not, because I know that I'm joined here by people who understand. But this constant battle with what's out online, what's being allowed against what isn't, is just so imbalanced, Chris.
Yeah, it just doesn't make no sense, does it? I mean, the social media platforms have got so much to answer for. And the amount of things that I've seen that I've reported to different social media platforms, and then it comes back and it goes, it's not against our community guidance. And I'm like, what? So my only other option now is if I see anything that I deem not right, not appropriate, then I just report it to the Internet Watch Foundation and let them deal with it. Because, you know, we have to just keep calling it out. But, you know, Simon Bailey, who used to head up Operation Hydrant, he said all those years ago that we can't arrest our way out of child sexual abuse images because it's so vast, it's a growth industry, there's lots of money in it, and so many people are taking part in it. There's such a high demand, and my skin crawls when I say this, there's such a high demand for it that they just can't keep up with it, and this is worldwide. So like, what the hell is going on? Who is fueling this? Why would so many people be interested in harming children and young people? It just makes me sick to my stomach.
So I don't know if any of you heard this story, but it kind of drove me a little bit insane. Though earlier on this year, Twitter locked out a bird charity, a scientific study on birds, because they were posting about woodcocks. And they've been banned now from Twitter because of it, and they can't get back onto Twitter. And I'm like, well, so this charity is sharing work about birds. There was no sexual context in the messages, as far as I could see anyway, because I had read them all. They've got banned, yet some of the stuff that I get sent on Twitter is just so freaking gross. I cannot understand. But like you say, the industry is so big. But it's just so imbalanced now with these conversations that it kind of gets to a place where you think, I don't know if I want to be in this world, right? On that social media world where they are banning scientific bird studies, surveys, who are genuinely doing great, lovely work out with nature, because they've used the word woodcock, which isn't offensive. Yet I saw pinned to a tweet, an influencer, his girlfriend was giving him oral sex online in his pinned tweet. And he's not banned. He's now in prison, but he wasn't banned for years. It doesn't make sense. Gloria, I know you had your hand up as well. Sorry. And Denny. Gloria.
And look, it doesn't make sense. And similarly with the channel I'm running, you know, I'll often get warnings because it's explicit, but there's always trigger warnings. However, I want to come back to what Chris said, because I think it's important. We are using the word normalizing the conversation to try and bring attention, yeah, to all of this. But what we don't realise is that out there we are being groomed, just pause for a moment, we are being groomed to accept that this material is, oh, it's just a bit of fun. It's just, you know, adults having a bit of fun. But what happens is through all our key media, through all our TV channels, radio stations, etc., there's this hinted at or alluded to sexualization of people and, dare I say, children. And we can see it. Look at any music video. Look at what young children are watching in terms of music video. And that brings me to my next point. The United Nations reported at the end of 2021 that the biggest growing industry, global industry, is human trafficking and child sex trafficking. So let's close the loop. How do people get interested in that? Through child exploitation materials. That is where the demand is, that is where the money is, that is where the growth is. So it's not that we cannot keep doing this, we must keep advocating and pushing and raising our hands because we're saving lives. Just don't underestimate the power of that statement. But I'm just here to say we're being groomed as well. Yeah. We just may not have realised it.
You know, Gloria, that kind of moves into the aspect that I was looking at there, and we know that, and when I say pornography, I'm talking the legal pornography, which is adults, and we know that the legal pornography is to have, sell or share adult pornography with other adults, but not if categorized as extreme. Well, my question is, what's extreme and who decides what's extreme? But as a therapist, I'm intrigued when I look at the effects of pornography on the brain, and we know that pornography consumption resembles reward seeking behavior. We know that, very similar to alcohol and drugs. And so therefore, when pornography is being viewed, and I, you know, particularly the amount of pornography that's accessible to young people these days, we know that that increases dopamine over time, and the brain builds up this tolerance to dopamine. So in order to get the same sense of pleasure and reward seeking, there's only two ways to go. You access more, or it becomes more extreme. You need more extreme content to have that dopamine rush. And I don't think that I can't sit here and think that there has to be a correlation between that, what goes on with huge consumption of pornography and the, I hate the word normalizing, but I am going to call it, you know, our young people are living their sex lives, are getting their beliefs, are getting their reward seeking dopamine through a quick switch of a button. And, you know, it's legal. But I have to say, most adult porn that I've been around is also abusive, brutal. We could go on forever around the women that are being used within the pornography industry. But for me, I think we are such on the rise with extreme sexual abuse and material and imagery that are we seeing a generation that have just gone into more extremes because of the dopamine that they're you know, getting in order to kind of have that reward seeking behavior. I think there's a whole number of reasons, but it's really worrying.
It is worrying. And I think just sort of going on from that, you've got also, you know, we talked about the entertainments. We've talked about artists out there who are, you know, very vocal and expressive with how they're feeling. Now, are they doing it for their audiences or are they doing it for themselves? And I think, you know, there's kind of no restriction on some of these young performers now who are out there expressing themselves, but in such a way that I truly believe, as someone who works in the industry, it's beyond, this isn't expressing yourself. It's going into other areas of conversation where I think, you know, we need to look at and, you know, have bigger conversations about, because you've got the young people out there influenced by the entertainment industry, the Andrew Tates, the influencers, online world, pornography, TikTok. It goes on and on and on and on and on. You know, children are hugely influenced by so much. And I sometimes feel, and you know, and I might be wrong, but I sometimes feel these influencers, these high profile people, celebrities, it's almost like they're after their biggest 2 minutes of fame with everything that they're doing without any consideration for their younger audience. And they don't need any more fame, right? But it's just having that headline in the front newspaper and to be all over social media, because it's challenging and it's conversational and it's not, it's damaging. And I get so frustrated by that. And I think, you know, those are the conversations with what we're talking about here today that we need to look at. But of course, that is a huge conversation in itself. And we don't have all the time in the world. But Denny, I'm going to just come to you now on that note to start summarising today's show.
Okay, well, I think we've established, haven't we, that at the top of all of this conversation is that there is absolutely no such thing as child pornography. It's absolutely child sexual abuse. It's a serious crime, and we know that reframing the language we use around child sexual abuse materials and imagery better enables professionals to trigger the appropriate child protection response. I think we've already explored, haven't we, that we all feel that, I mean, that crime scene, I can still hear it ringing in my ear, Chris. I mean, you know, that's a really great example of the power of language. How can you not confront? It's so much harder to turn a blind eye, isn't it, when, you know, that kind of language is used. And again, for me, I think that the conversation is out there, but we are still seeing a far more narrative on the perpetrators. We don't really get to hear about the victim and the impact that it's had on the victim, understandably so. I mean, at the point that someone's being charged or sentenced, I mean, the trauma that victim is still in, of course, there's not going to be the flip side of that story told. But I think we need to maybe try and find a way where, in a safe space, that impact can be spoken about. And again, I think for me, I worry about the normalization of pornography on our young people and how that then is going to perpetuate further on down the line.
Thank you, Denny. Great summary there on a very difficult conversation. So thank you very much to Denny. If you'd like to connect with Denny, you can find her on Twitter. She is at Denny Counselling, and that is D-E-N-I, no S-E, Denny Counselling, C-O-N-S-E-L-L-I-N-G. That's at Denny Counselling. You will find her on Twitter, and on Twitter, then you can connect with Denny all around all her other websites and other social media. Chris Tuck is on Twitter at @ChrisTuck_WWHF. That is @ChrisTuck_WWHF. And my guest today, handingtheshameback.org, is Gloria Masters. So please go to her website, handingtheshameback.org, because she has got a fantastic website with so much detail on there of all the work that she's doing over in New Zealand. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you here with us, Gloria, today. So thank you very much for getting up early, for one, and being a day ahead of us. I mean, that's just so cool in itself. That's a thing. So thank you very much, Gloria. You're ahead of us in so many ways over in New Zealand. Thank you very much for coming on. So I'm just going to ask you all, we've got literally like a minute and a half to go. Just one word from all of you to describe your feelings towards today's show. So let's start with you, Gloria. One word, Gloria.
Hope.
Thank you. Chris.
Worried.
And Denny.
Impactful.
Yes, and I've actually felt really inspired again by so many things, and certainly by what Chris has said, that this is a crime scene. And I think I hope to see Chris around on that conversation, because I think, you know, that you've got such a big conversation there, Chris, and thank you for sharing that with us. Well, look, we are coming up for the last few seconds. I get in a lot of trouble if I go over. Thank you very much to everybody who's come onto the show today, to Denny, to Chris, to Gloria, and for trying to normalize such a difficult conversation, you know, like we're trying to do, is trying to get these conversations out there. The more we engage, the more normal they do become, even though still very difficult. Thank you also to Johan and the team behind the scenes here at UK Health Radio, to Christine and everyone else who makes this show happen. You're all amazing, and we are blessed to be able to have you to be able to share this show on UK Health Radio. So thank you very much. Until the next time, goodbye and stay safe and well.